Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, it was Marshall McLuhan who said that advertising was the greatest art form of the 20th century. George Orwell described advertising as, quote, the rattling of a stick inside a swill bucket. Don't you love that? According to one ad man, writing ads is the second most profitable form of writing, the first being writing ransom notes. Compare it to art, or compare it to swill, or compare it to extortion. No doubt, advertising is everywhere and affects us more than we would probably care to admit. And I guess one of the men who's actually helped us to understand that most this year, in fact the last couple of years, is actually this man, John Casimer. With Andrew Denton, John created a little TV program you might have heard about called The Gruen Transfer. A number of you watch it, don't you?
Thank you.
John Casimer, everybody. John, I was saying before, I reckon The Gruen Transfer would have to be one of the most creative pieces of television that's come around in years. How did you and Andrew come up with this idea? Oh, well, Andrew, he had nothing to do with it. How did you come up with this idea?
See, I reckon it's just incredibly obvious, and it should have been around for about 40 or 50 years. I'm buoyed when people say, wow, what a great and creative idea, but I think, why hasn't this show been around for ages? Because certainly all my life, I have wondered why advertising is something we don't talk about. It is a $500 billion global turnover industry. The advertising business believes that each one of us in this room and listening to this will see 3,000 commercial messages a day. And yet we don't talk about it. It's an extraordinary attempt to be... They say advertising wants to be the air that we breathe. They talk about 360-degree, 24/7 advertising. Advertising wants to be everywhere and everything to us, and we don't talk about it. So really, the show just comes from that thought.
Yeah, well, the show, and now the book, a very sneaky front cover, by the way. Yeah. If you look at the cover, the front cover of the book, if you look really carefully, it actually says, "Buy me."
So far, there is... Yeah, it's a bit of an optical illusion cover. And so far, there is one person in the world who can't see it, and I work with him.
Really?
Been showing him the cover.
Mr.
Andrew held up the cover when I first brought it in and said, oh, that's beautiful, it's gold, it's shiny, it's lovely. And I said, yeah, it's got a message in it. And he's like, really? Apparently he couldn't. You remember the 3D stereoscopic?
Yeah.
He couldn't do those
either.
Can't
see it.
He does have other talents.
Yes. So he hasn't bought the book.
Bless him.
You know, there's subliminal advertising you're already running on it. You've learned all these tricks, now you're running them on us.
We have learned something in 3 years of doing the show, and hopefully it'll work with the book.
You've come out with some amazing things in the book, actually, some amazing facts. I mean, who knew that we were actually biased towards brands that actually have our own initials in them?
Yeah. People are very strange, and despite what we want to think, we're mostly irrational. I think we're more irrational than we are rational.
McKay was saying it before.
And so there's some amazing consumer research out there. And one of the things, that some of them stick in my mind, yeah, first of all, we are more likely to buy brands if they have our own initials. So, yeah, somebody called Polly is more likely to buy Pepsi than Coke, by and large. Another one that is we will spend more if we're sad. We will pay up to four times as much for the same item if we're sad than we will if we're happy. One of the ones that really grabs me is the notion why we pay $19.95 or $19.99 for something instead of $20. Mm. Now, most of us think that that's a pretty simple thing, really. They're trying to cheat us into thinking that it's not $20, it's cheaper than $20. It's actually not that. I mean, that's part of it, it doesn't hurt. But the key psychological reaction that is going on there is that we believe that the complicated number, $19.95, must have taken more time for the shopkeeper to come to and is therefore more likely to be a believable and trustworthy number.
Is that right?
$20? They would have just thrown that off.
Huh.
Just
that
charge
right?
$20.
So how much is the book?
The book is $39.95.
Yeah, here we are.
I told you, we're learning.
We're
learning.
And using. Now, true or false, Pizza Hut once tried to burn its logo onto the face of the moon.
Well, officially, they will probably try and tell you it's false, but everyone knows it's true. They apparently spent nearly $20 million and a period of some months, if not more than a year, trying to work out how to do it before somebody said to them, you know what, there is a scale issue here. I know it looks like the moon's not that big in the sky, but it's quite large. So if you want to put a logo on it, you're talking about a logo the size of New South Wales. And you're going to have to burn that in with a laser, and the lasers are expensive. So Pizza Hut decided at that point, hang it, we'll just send up a rocket. So Pizza Hut actually spent, it paid to, because the Russian space program is largely advertising funded. And Russian spaceships are really happy to put giant logos on the outside of them. So Pizza Hut just paid for a rocket, at which point Pepsi got really miffed and decided to pay for a space station. There was, in the 90s, there was actually a little escalating space ad war to the point where when Pizza Hut gave up on the moon, somebody else said, you know what we should do? We should make giant floating billboards in the night sky that are approximately a kilometre across. And then NASA and various other bodies got the UN to kind of outlaw the idea before it got off the ground. But people were funding kilometre square billboards that were just going to drift across the night sky.
Aren't they still planning that?
They would, but it's been banned.
It has been banned now.
Yeah.
There's kind of no area of the world that hasn't been colonised by advertising.
Well, that is its job. Its job is to be everywhere we are. I mean, and again, that's another thing that really drives the show for me, is this desire to come to terms with the fact that wherever you look, advertising has looked there first and put an ad.
Yeah, yeah. You quote Kevin Roberts, who said that the goal of branding is, quote, loyalty without reason.
Loyalty beyond reason.
Beyond reason. What are the sneakiest tricks, then, that you've come across in doing the research for the Grim Transfer to then see what people are... You know, what tricks are they using to try and help us to be loyal to a product beyond reason?
Well, first of all, let me say that I think the greatest example of loyalty beyond reason is Apple. I think Apple if I'm kind, I'll use the word cult.
Okay. Now, how many people here have got an iPhone? Just put up your hand.
Yeah.
Look at that. I mean, there we go. iPhone came out, at 4 months ago? 3-4 months ago?
Yeah.
5 months ago?
It's an extraordinary brand. You have to take your hat off and applaud its marketing team. But I do think it's done an amazing job of selling us nothing in a box.
there's 100 people here that are going to be chasing you out the front door in a second.
I often get in trouble for bringing up. But coming back to... I mean, I don't like to use the word tricks because I don't think they are tricks. I think the thing about advertising is they put it all out there. If you look and if you ask them, they'll just tell you what they're doing. And that's, again, one of the reasons we did the show. But the things that amaze me that people don't know about are things like neuromarketing. One of the new frontiers of advertising is neuromarketing. And all around the world, there are people being wired up in functional magnetic resonance imaging labs. And they're increasingly, in this country too, in Melbourne in particular, they are testing ads by mapping brain response to them. And so what they do is they map the brain response to an ad because they're trying to work out how to get the product laid into your memory. So the theory is that there's a Frankenstein model here, and what they're going to come up with is a cortex hot button that they're going to be allowed to press and we won't be able to resist the advertising. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's just kind of a bit scary. But the truth is they are tweaking and doing some quite extraordinary things to ads based on what they're finding out in the brain mapping.
Mm-hmm. That's why we need the Gruen Transfer and other things like it. It's kind of a bit scary, isn't it? John Casimir is the producer of the Gruen Transfer. He is with us on Open House, our 2010 finale tonight. What I find really interesting about advertising is that, 60s, 70s or so, there was a bit of a turn. Before that, we'd had kind of really functionally oriented advertising. Deodorant stops you smelling bad. You know, this product does this. And then we saw this turn towards products being marketed towards satisfying some sort of inner... personal need. Somebody even actually say a spiritual need. Now deodorant helps you be attractive to other people. Lynx makes you hot with the women. What do you see in that? Why do we see that turn from functional to then kind of symbolic, sometimes even spiritual needs that are being focused
there,
on?
There are two turns. There's one that happened in the 20s. In fact, I think that the turn you're driving at happened more in the 1920s. And then there's another one in the 60s. And they both come at points of prosperity. The 60s one, obviously, in the post-war. The 20s one, after the First World War, in America in particular. And in the 20s, you get a whole lot of stories of the creation of need. The creation of need is a really big part of advertising because they've got something they want to sell you. You don't need it. We don't need 90% of the things that we buy. So the job of advertising is to create a need that doesn't exist. And they worked that out in the 1920s. In fact, there's an amazing guy called Edgar Bernays, who's the father of modern PR, who wrote a book in the 20s called Propaganda, because he loved to call it propaganda until Joseph Goebbels ruined that word for him about 20 years later. Mm-hmm. And he was of the belief that it was the job of PR people and advertising people to make all our decisions for us because we were too dumb. But what happened in the 60s that you're driving at, what really happened is really simple. apart from the fact that there was a lot more money and a lot more disposable income and a lot more manufacturing that was trying, and a lot more things for us to buy, advertising became dominated by psychology. And they came to a really simple decision, and a profound decision that still dominates advertising today, and that is, there's no point advertising to our rational selves. As I said to you before, we're largely irrational. So what advertising does is it advertises to our emotions. And they're looking to get, most times, an emotional response from us. Not all advertising, there's different types, but by and large, they're looking to get an emotional response. And that is why, coming back to, say, Apple, for an example, Apple's thing is, if you buy me, you're creative. No, you're not. You're just not. You're probably doing what everyone else is going to do with the iPhone, that is, you playing the same apps, calling the same friends, you're not doing anything particularly creative with. But Apple has put a mortgage on creativity, and its brand is creativity. If you buy Apple, you are... We all have brand values. If you buy Apple, you are creative, you are cutting edge, you are kind of inner city coffee drinking cool. You are... All these things... I mean, it's a damn plastic thing in a box.
Right,
you know?
Right. But see, this goes back to something we were talking to Hugh McKay about the fact that we actually build our identities on other things. I mean, what you just talked about there, we're building an identity.
We build
a
our
sense
identities
of self.
Brand.
I am kind of cool, I'm creative, etc., because I've actually bought this product. That is fundamentally problematic for me, even though I know that I'd be a part of it as much as all of us
we're
are.
We're all part of it.
Indeed.
Everyone. One of my favourite things, because I am a middle-class, tertiary-educated, inner-city wanker. And I love meeting people like me who all go, oh, advertising doesn't get to me. I'm above all that. I know it affects other people. It doesn't get to me. And I always say, let me come into your kitchen and open your cupboard. Let me open your garage. In fact, let me look in your handbag. No, let me just look at your handbag. And I'll be able to tell. Because the thing is, we are all prisoners of it. We all get called in by the siren call. And I'll just give you a quick story for myself, from my own life. I've worn Converse sneakers all my life, and I have to concede that the reason I've worn Converse sneakers is because I thought they were kind of a little bit retro, a little bit cool, a little bit not mainstream, and very much not Nike. Because I've always thought Nike, right? Nike, what does Nike stand for in my head? Nike is the mainstream, frankly bogan, sweatshop, unethical, unlovely brand, and guess what?
There's radio producers around Australia hitting the dump button at the moment.
There was a wonderful day when I discovered that Nike owns Converse. And we get done all the time. I'm sure there are people here, and particularly women, who love the Dove campaign for Real Beauty ads. The Dove campaign that came out a few years ago that celebrated real women. It was all about real women and using women of different shapes and different looks. And you know, that comes from a company called Unilever. Now, Unilever also give us Lynx. And Lynx is the most sexist advertising on television.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you, which one of those two things does Unilever believe in? The objectification of women or the non-objectification of women? And I reckon neither. I reckon they believe in the dollar, and that's all it is.
Before we let you go, then, what do you think we should be keeping in mind then? When this is a silly season, of course, for consumption, with the kind of things that you've been talking about tonight, just leave us with a couple of things we should be keeping in our mind when we're kind of, you know, walking out this door and then, I guess, being bombarded by those 3,000 advertising messages. Advertising has got its role. I mean, these stations that we're listening to wouldn't exist without some form of what we call sponsorship.
Oh, yeah.
But we're talking about all this neuromarketing and all these kinds of things. What should we be keeping in mind?
Well, let me say a couple of things very quickly. Advertising is good in many ways. A lot of things I love most in the world wouldn't exist without advertising. I like newspapers, right? We wouldn't have newspapers without advertising. I happen to like professional sport. I don't think we'd have that without advertising. Advertising creates jobs and in certain circumstances saves lives. I think the Pinky road safety campaign demonstrably saved lives that year. The road toll dropped massively. What I would like people to do is to, and this is the whole point of the Gruen transfer from us, we it's a light entertainment show according to the AFIs, but we view it as serious entertainment. We reckon you can be entertaining and have a message. What we would like people to do is to engage. We would just like people to actually start noticing the advertising that's around them, because if we start to notice it, then we can more effectively move through it. I don't think we can ever entirely resist it, and I don't think it's a case of just wanting to switch the whole thing off. That would also stop capitalism, and capitalism brings us many good things too, as well as some bad. But it's just a case of being, you know, it's the leading an examined life. to me. Leading an examined life, part of leading an examined life is examining the media through which you swim.
I think you are right. John Casimir from The Gruen Transfer.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.